Let's go. So the other day I was just thinking to myself, is a zebra a black animal with white stripes or a white animal with black stripes?
I don't know. I have no idea. I always thought it was a white animal with black stripes because there's more white than black on a zebra.
Really? Is there?
I think so.
But what if it's the other way around?
I kind of want to know this now. I want to know this. Is a zebra a horse? All right. Is a zebra black or white? They're generally thought to have white coats with black stripes, sometimes brown stripes. It means that black is the actual color of the fur and the white patches are simply the areas that lack pigmentation. So by that logic, zebras are black.
With white stripes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Cool. All right.
All righty.
Welcome back to this episode of The Last Set.
That was so off topic.
Yeah. Really, we try to switch things up these days.
Yeah. You
know, just keep the, what is it, audience.
A big variety of our audience. Yeah. They probably like animals too.
Now they're probably, I think we just shut the book on that conspiracy theory. Well, someone, the reason why I said it was because someone asked me the other day. I thought.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Such a weird question as well, because like you always assume it's white with black stripes because it's more there's more white than black.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or when we looked it up, it said the actual fur was black. Like their fur is black. The bits that are left out is the ones that they just like black fur. That's so weird. Anyway, though this is so definitely not part of the MMA hour, but you learn something every day.
Yeah,
so,
well, today's a very, very special day though, because today... Right now,
good point. Yeah.
We are filming the 10th episode of the podcast.
Yeah, so this is our 10th one now. I think we've done 4 everyday hours, and this will be our 6th MMA hour, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's the 6th.
I believe it is, because I know today's the 10th.
I'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure this is 100% our 10th.
Yeah, 100%. And it's the first time we've reached a massive milestone. Well, our first ever, one of our first milestones. One of the first milestones we reached was over 300 views.
On YouTube.
And then how many downloads did we get?
120?
Even more. We busted for our first 100.
100 followers on Instagram. Yeah,
good.
Our first kind of milestone was 100 likes on Facebook. That was quick.
Yeah.
That pretty quickly.
Well, to all the people who did like me on Facebook, or like us on Facebook, we do say thank you. And all the people who follow us and subscribe to us.
Yeah.
You know, you're part of the beginning of this podcast. And now we've reached another milestone. Yeah. And we wouldn't be if it wasn't for you guys as well.
Well, how long have we been doing it for? 5-6 weeks?
Roughly around that time now.
Probably our six week or something like that.
Yeah, and we're trying to keep it to like 1 to 2 podcasts per week.
Yeah, so we're trying to do the MMA hour, which is the MMA related podcast, and you know, boxing, everything, martial arts. And then we have the everyday hour where we talk about stories or mainstream media. I know you should check out our last podcast. We did a deep dive onto you know what Joe's life was when he first told his parents that you know he was an adult stripper and topless waiter, and all the awkwardness and funny stories that come with it. You have a bottomless pit of stories with that kind of industry, so...
Well, it's just there's never really a dull moment. Like, we literally finally did our first show back on Friday, and it was probably... I mean, I'm not going to lie, I was actually nervous, really nervous going into that show because I was like, oh, man, I haven't done this in so long.
Mm.
Even though we go for rehearsals, but, you know, when we do rehearsals, it's in a studio and it's against mirrors. There's no crowd, you know, there's no crowd effect. And you know what?
How long was it without doing it? When was the last show? And when was the first show was, what, was it Friday?
I think, yeah, the first show. Well, it was a private one.
We did a Friday and a Saturday gig.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So Friday was your first show in a long time. How long has it been?
I think it's got to be since February.
Since February?
Well, because you think about it, coronavirus struck in March, didn't it? Around that time, because it was in the beginning of university,
around that time,
in those first few weeks, that's when coronavirus hit, and then we had, I think, one show in February, and then that was it, because, well, all the places couldn't have us anymore.
March and April was when everyone was starting to close up, and April was when, the start of April meant there was nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing was open.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
And then, at the end of June, things started to reopen again. I believe.
And like the end of June.
Yeah.
The end of June. Oh, no, no, actually, no. Remember, it was the 6th of June. That's when they released the WA, you know, was it phase? Phase?
Oh, yes, yeah. Phase 3. But I didn't go back to work till later on the end of that month. Yeah. Yeah. But it was, stepping on stage Friday, well, because we know about social facilitation and, you know, if you don't practice enough, you're going to do even worse on the night. But if you practice even more, you're going to do even better. And there was definitely a lot of pre-performance anxiety. I remember I was at the back of the area with the guys, and I was like, "Fuck, man, it's been a while." But at the same time, I was just so excited to get up on stage. And basically what it was for was a women's comedy night. Women's only comedy night.
And so, you knew a few of them there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. There was a couple there, and there's four. I think there was four or five of them women, and they're a group called the Motherhood, and they are great comedians. And
really?
Yeah, and they were doing like really long sets. I think everyone there each were doing like at least 15-20 minutes a set. That's what I heard. I didn't get enough time to stick around and listen to them. But yeah, it was a great show overall. But they weren't expecting us. You know what I mean? It was a little bit of a surprise for them. But over than that, it just felt great to be back on stage.
Right. So let me get this right. You did a strip show at a comedy show.
No, it was just a dance show.
It was just a dance show.
Just a dance show.
But you just happened to be strippers.
Really? Yeah, pretty much. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Well, because that's what we do as well. We do dance shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You do, like Magic Mike, Back to the Grind, all that kind of stuff. But it's just there's minimal clothes coming off. That's all. It's not that much. It's more like changing in between. Yeah, what I mean.
Yeah. I understand.
Anyway, so today's very special episode of the MMA Hour, and yeah, Jack, do you want to kick us off?
So today we watched the UFC fight night, and the headlining card was the co-main, the star for the co-main, was Chris Weidman versus a big angry Russian dude. I say that because can you pronounce his name for me? Because it's very difficult.
Amari Akhmedov. Amakhmedov.
Say it one more time.
Amakhmedov.
No, say it one more time.
Amakhmedov. Akhmedov.
Akhmedov. I've got it here. Omari
Akhmedov. Akhmedov.
Akhmedov. Against Chris Weidman. A lot of people, you know, were canning out on Chris Weidman.
Yeah.
A lot of people were going for Omari because, you know, he's been doing not too well in his last fights.
Yeah, he's lost. Out of his last seven, he's only won two. Because he's lost to Yura Romero, he's lost to Rockhold, he's lost to Musashi, and he's lost to Souza, and he tried to go up to light heavyweight to fight Dominic Reyes, and he lost there as well. And basically, it was in the first round as well. It was not pretty.
So, to be honest, putting him up to light heavyweight, and you give him Dominic Reyes, who arguably beat John Jones today, because obviously
still hold firm today that he did.
but. The thing is, though, Weidman was a different kind of Weidman tonight. He didn't fall in love with his hands, and he used his wrestling really well. I would say, you know, he wasn't winning on the feet, because that Omari guy has a lot of power. If you see that Omari guy, look at that guy's build. He's enormous. His back is so thick. But Weidman was very smart. He neutralized that and said, "Look, I can't stand up with him the same caliber as Omari, and I've got to watch out for those because any of those shots can knock me out." So he went in and he really controlled him. He tied up the legs, went in for a lot of ground and pound, and in the I believe it was in the second round, Weidman finished it. Yeah,
I mean, it's good to see Weidman back, you know, because if we
also no, it wasn't the second round, sorry. It was a decision.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, it's great to see Weidman back because there was a time in UFC history where he was the shit. Like, he was the most looked at fighter. And that was when...
Well, that was about when he was fighting Rockhold.
Yeah, but not even that. But when he was fighting Anderson Silva for the first time. Anderson, yeah. Yeah, and they called him knocking out Anderson Silva one of the best knockouts in UFC history when Anderson Silva literally dropped his hands, was just trying to dodge.
He was kind of showboating.
He was
showboating and he got caught.
He got, and then he tried to do the same. He did it for a while, and then again on the second time, he tried to showboat again, kicked Chris Weidman's leg, and then Anderson Silva shattered his entire leg. And then that was one of the most brutal injuries.
He just broke his tibia in half.
Oh, he did. It's a full snap, yeah.
It was a very clean break.
Every time I go back and watch it, it just makes me squirmish and it just makes me cringe.
Gross. It's gross.
Because I can't fathom the pain that goes through, especially when you're breaking your shin bone. Like, just knocking your shin bone against something.
It must be so painful to just snap your tibia in half. Your whole shin bone snaps in half. As well as, when you're in a fight, you have so much adrenaline, you can't feel as much.
Yeah.
But as soon as he broke it, he was just howling in pain. The amount of pain he must have felt, even with that adrenaline going through him, would have been unreal.
Yeah. Here's the weird thing, though, when it comes to those sorts of injuries. You hear people say that when we go through those sort of injuries, or like they lose a limb or a finger, they don't feel it for like the first, like, 10 the first couple of minutes, apparently, because the brain's like, oh shit, and the body just rushes all these endorphins, so that way you don't feel the full pain, and then you start to realize, oh shit, I lost a finger, or I've broken my leg. That's when you finally realize that, oh, that's when the pain really starts to kick in.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct myself. When I was saying round two KO, I actually meant Derek Lewis. I got a little bit confused. I remember when I was scoring it, I scored it 29-28. With Weidman winning the first round because of the amount of control he had, as well as the third. Omari was coming back in the second. I really hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but he dominated the second round. So I scored at 29-28. Moving on to Derek Lewis against Alexei Oleinik. Now I'm going to tell you a funny story about with Oleinik. I typically don't bet on the UFC, right? But you know I have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to bet because MMA is terrible for betting because it can really... MMA is one of the most dangerous sports for like just a freak thing to happen, a freak straight punch. They're only 4-ounce gloves. You've got bare shin bones. There's, you know, people can gas out in later rounds and get choked unconscious by submission artists. It's very difficult for you to get it right. However, I was actually in Melbourne with my girlfriend and my family, and we went to, I can't remember what bar it was in Melbourne, but we went upstairs. It was a cool sports bar. I really should check what it is. We were watching the Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone fight live at the pub and that, and there was all these Irish guys out. And the Irish guys, they had these big, so what they were was, they have these big, do you know what they are? They're like... It's like a big bit of a big glass cylinder of beer with a little tap.
Oh yeah, the 1 liter beers with the tap.
Yeah,
yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Oh, they were more than a liter.
More than three liters,
right? they were huge, right? And the Irish guys destroyed them. Every fight, they would get just a new one. Every fight. So that means like every pretty much 15 minutes, they'd get a fresh one, and I was like, If there's anyone that can drink, it's Scottish, Irish, English.
Mm.
Okay, they're the ones that can properly drink.
Yeah, but the thing is that you just mentioned that, but we're not much of drinkers.
I barely drink.
You know why I barely drink? Because like I hate the effect that it has on me.
Mm. We spoke about it on the last podcast. Yeah. So we don't like being. It's weird. I did in the past, but it really after like a year or two. It just lost. It really did lose its appeal, and I can't do it anymore. Anyway, back to the story. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, it's all good.
but back to the story. I was watching the we were there for the Conor McGregor versus Cerrone fight. We were watching the other fights as well, and there was the Holly Holm fight, and there was Alexei Oleinik, and I can't remember who Alexei Oleinik was fighting, but. Everyone was betting against this guy, right? And actually did a parlay for this guy that he would win. And he was one of the people... because I did two parlays. One for the earlier fights and one for the main card. And the earlier card, this parlay. Two of the fights already won, and then the third fight was Olenek, and I really needed him to win because I looked up his. I'd already seen him fight before, and I knew how old he was. I think he's 42 or something. He's a really old guy, right? And he certainly looks like it. But I felt so strongly that he was going to win because of the amount of submissions he's got under his record. You know, he's literally nicknamed the boa constrictor, all right? And I was watching him, and he managed to win. And I was so happy after that. Like, I think that night I think it was almost $200 or something like that. I'd won just that day, just betting on the UFC. And I would never recommend to bet on the UFC or MMA in general, because unless you feel really confident about it, most likely the favorites will win.
Mm-hmm.
But Olenek was such an underdog, and I knew his record and how good he was on the ground, that I felt so strongly that he was going to win. And he ended up winning. Have you seen Olenek? Because
he's one of the oldest fighters in the game right now.
He looks really old.
Yeah, he's 42.
He's 42. He does an interesting thing where he puts his, during his breaks, he'll lie on the ground, head facing the center of the octagon, and then he'll put his legs up on the net of the fence of the cage, and he'll put his legs up so he can draw more blood away from his legs. And they put an ice pack on his, and it was an interesting way because I think he just doesn't care what anyone will say about it. It's actually just a smart way to recover.
Yeah. Well, actually, my question, the validity of that that method of recovery, hopefully there's some science that can go behind it, really.
I believe it's smart because when you've been doing a lot of blood pools in your legs quite a lot, and they do get really, really heavy, and what he's doing is he's trying to cool down and he's trying to bring his heart... You bring your heart rate down a lot faster if you put your legs up with the ice pack on your... And you know when we would do there's a test that a lot of people get, and it's your recovery test for your heart rate, and when you're testing, and we did this in university. Do you remember that when we would do the running on the treadmill, or you would have to do some short 1 minute of aerobic exercise, your heart rate would go up, and we would record how quickly it would drop down. And one of the best ways was to, you know, go on the floor and put your legs up and things like that. So he's actually used that, and it does work very well. Unfortunately for Olenek, although I am praising him, he lost to Derek Lewis in the second round. Now, we know Derek Lewis, he's a beast. And he's called the Black Beast for a reason. He's an absolute beast. So he won in the second round. So in the last bit of the first round, it felt like Lewis was really like putting the pressure on Olenek. And in the second round, he beat him in the last 21 seconds of the second round. He just knocked that guy. And Olenek tried to go for a single leg. It was too late. Lewis just did. He does these really good short hooks, and they're so quick. They're so quick when you get into his range. Derek Lewis was number four, I believe, in the heavyweight the division. Oh, he's still a really big contender. Because remember, he fought for Daniel Cormier. He fought against
Daniel Cormier, and he lost in the second round via rear naked choke.
Yeah, yeah. And we knew that, he was just... He's very tough with the stand-up, and he's very dangerous. But we knew Cormier is a beast at wrestling,
mm-hmm.
and nullifying a lot of people's stand-up.
Yeah.
He's a beast on the ground.
Well, speaking of it, people love Derek Lewis in general. Like, now, he's one of those characters in the UFC that everyone seems to just like enjoy and thinks is funny. Like, I remember
he's a meme lord.
He is. You've seen the shit he posts on Instagram. A lot of it gets taken down, but it's just some of the craziest things that just happens. And not even that, but the things he says after the in the Octagon interviews. Like, UFC is one of the only sport where people can literally love someone literally for the interviews or not if it makes or break them. Like, if you take some people like, let's say, for example, because interviews sort of like can determine their next fight, but it's like, if it's not like football or, you know, in the NFL, the NBA, like, if one of the players literally came out to the mic press conference and started mouthing off, no one's going to really care, you know what I mean?
It's not something that's...
going to affect his overall public image that much.
It doesn't really... Yeah, it doesn't really do anything, whereas there are some really big fighters out there, but as soon as they get on the mic, it's, you know, it's a snore fest,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And Derek Lewis gets on, he just says, like, he is... Like, what he said today, and we put it up on our Instagram as well, if you want to check that out. But he went straight away. He was talking to Paul Felder, who was talking to him, and interviewing him from, like, a distance just because of Corona. And he was said, Paul, I've really got to take a shit, man. Take a shit, man. And Paul Felder's like, all right, I need you to do a quick interview, then you can go to the toilet, bro.
Well, it's funny because he's always saying things like that. Well, you never forget that time when he was losing to Alexander Volkov on the Conor McGregor versus Khabib
Nurmagomedov. We watched that fight in an Irish pub.
And I remember you telling me, I was saying, oh yeah, Volkov's going to win. I was saying Volkov's going to win. And you're like, nah, man, trust me, this Derek Lewis dude, he's held durable. And he was losing for 3 rounds, and then finally he smacked.
I told you. I said, Derek Lewis, and I said, until the bell rings, you do not count on Derek Lewis because of the, and it happened because, he was losing, he was getting dominated. And, obviously Volkov, it's not like you picked a bad pick. Volkov's a really good kickboxer.
Yeah.
But he's just like, he's just got crazy power in his hands. And when he does connect, you better recover quick because he's going to come down and he's going to throw everything at you.
Oh, yeah. And then literally after Derek Lewis won, Joe Rogan goes into the cage and he goes to Derek Lewis, Derek Lewis, why did you take your pants off? And he goes,
my balls were hot.
We love him literally just for that one set.
He's so funny.
And then Joe Rogan's just like, I understand.
I understand very much.
And then
he did it
to him again. He's like, you taking your pants off again, sir? He goes, no, I forgot where I was at. And there's another one where he goes, I can't remember who he beat, but he said, at the party tonight, in my...
I think it was the same interview that you really? Said earlier.
Yeah, we're having an after party tonight, and you can all buy me a shot, but I ain't buying you shit.
And now the whole crowd goes insane.
They love him just for that.
Well, we love him. I think he's hilarious. He has some of the best ones. One of his most common things he puts on Instagram is like the fails or the flops or something bad happens or someone gets smacked, and he always puts it on the caption, he's okay.
Yeah.
She's okay.
I mean, the UFC has found ways literally to create characters that people love other than just their fighting.
They've done well at marketing.
Yeah.
And building a personality for the fighter and making it known.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You're going to hate me for this, but it's a bit like wrestling. It's a bit like WWE. Because on the WWE, the reason why people love the superstar so much is because of their personalities, you know what I mean? They create that character and they get so attached to it. It is very similar to, what's it called, the UFC.
Which worked well when Brock Lesnar came over, and then when he got on the mic, he was in his element.
Because he'd
already done it.
There you go. It's not even that, but like I got to ask today, you take... some of the best personalities in the sport today, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everyone's got their own fighting style, but everyone's got their own personality in the sport. Right. If you take people who have great, the Colby Covingtons, the Jorge Masvidals, the Conor McGregors, all those people have that eccentric nature, okay? You take away their eccentric nature. They're just there solely for the purpose of fighting. Do you think they'll be as big?
Oh, no, certainly not.
Because...
They won't be as big, right?
Exactly. And some people have literally just made money or made the next fight just off the ring interview or call-out. Nate Diaz called out Conor McGregor. Next thing you know...
But Nate Diaz already had a huge following.
There you go. But he made himself even bigger.
He did. Well, that's what he said. He said, I'm going to come in, I'm going to steal this guy's hype.
Yeah.
He did. And then I think he tried to do the same thing for Jorge. When Jorge... stole Ben Askren's hype, being the one FC champion, beating all the people in the Asian you know, professional circuit. And then they throw him at Jorge. Jorge knocks him out, you know, the quickest knockout in UFC history. Nate Diaz looks at that guy and goes, well, wait, I'm going to take that guy's hype.
There you go.
It just didn't happen to work out his on his night.
There you go. And not even that, Colby Covington saved his UFC career literally just from creating a new personality. If it wasn't for him saying, Brazil, this country's a dump, all you filthy animals suck, Tyron Woodley, I'm coming for you. I'm taking what's mine.
Well, that's the thing. Negativity sells so well, just like the same way clickbait works really well. Yes. Outrage causes views and likes and comments, and it causes more people to be interacting with that social media or app, which means more dollar signs.
Oh, yeah.
Negativity sometimes sells way better than positivity because people fixate on it so much more.
Because they get more likely to emotionally respond to a negative.
Exactly. And when you more emotionally respond, it's typically for longer periods of time. And that's the main goal. The main goal of these social media is absolutely to interact with it first and interact with it the most and then send it to other people so that they can be outraged as well. So, to your point, I think a lot of these fighters like Conor McGregor and Michael Bisping and things like that, who are very good on the mic, know they wouldn't be as big a star if they couldn't run their mouth in, you know, the interviews or the post-fight conferences and things like that. No, they wouldn't. But the reason why a lot of these big superstars work is what the UFC loves, if they can talk. Mm-hmm. And if they can walk. Conor McGregor can talk and walk. Michael Bisping talked and walked. Most recently, Israel Adesanya, talk and walk. That's the reason why a lot of people are really going at Sugar Sean O'Malley. He can talk and he can walk, right?
He's fine.
He is fine at UFC 252 against Marlon Chito Vera. We'll talk about that in a sec. I just wanted to say that when it comes with Sean O'Malley, a lot of people are saying, well, he hasn't fought anyone in the top 15. He hasn't fought anyone in the top 10. I think he is that caliber fighter. I think the UFC are really trying to build him up because I think they were trying to do that with Darren Till because he can talk and walk as well, but they did it a little bit too quick. I think they're taking their time with Sugar Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, there's certain fighters that really can be pushed too quick. I think
Darren Till is one of those fighters.
Yeah, and that's the problem. That's what I'm scared about. I'm scared that Sugar Sean O'Malley, that he's going to be pushed too quick. But he's not fighting for a title yet, which I'm happy with. And I reckon we should just give him a couple more fights before he can keep going. See, here's the thing that's going on right now about being pushed too quick. Is the Cody Garbrandt is fighting for the flyweight title. Is it the flyweight?
Flyweight title, yeah.
Yeah, he's going down another division. So he's a bantamweight going down to flyweight to fight for the flyweight
title.
There
was a bit of controversy with that because he's jumped the line. I think there was... There's at least four or five fighters.
Oh yeah.
Should have the chance to go for that title. I think it was. I think number five is Kai. Is it Kai Kara France? Anyway, a lot of people in that division really deserve to go for that title fight. I think a lot of it is Cody can talk. And he can walk. And not only that, he's a former champion.
But the thing is, he's literally came off... Well, he's only got one win and he lost his last three fights, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. So how does you go off and you take, a year, 2 years off? And then...
I don't think he took a year or two. I think he took maybe a year. And the reason why he took a year is kind of just to mentally get there. And he looks brilliant right now.
Oh, he looks great. He came out, he stuck to a game plan. And then he did that hook straight off the cage. It's probably one of the best knockouts of that card.
Yeah, 100%.
And now he's fighting for the title in a weight division he's never fought against.
I think he's trying to do what TJ couldn't do.
Yeah, I think that's what he's trying to do. I think he's trying to send a fuck you to TJ, basically.
I think he is, and then it also builds up, maybe a rematch again.
Well, if TJ comes back.
A number three, a trilogy fight. That is an interesting thought, because I was telling you earlier, I don't know when... Could you look up for me when TJ's suspension ends? Because it was an interesting thought, and I did see this online. Some people were saying... Yes, he's lost his last three fights. One was against Pedro Munhoz, but he looked like he was going to beat Pedro, but he actually he got stuck in the brawl again, and he lost by KO. But the thing is, a lot of people were saying, well, should you even count those losses to TJ because he's taken EPO in the past? He's admitted to being on EPO like for the Henry Cejudo fight, and that he said it was simply just so he could get down. He took like an erythropoietin kind of medication for anemia.
So
do you believe that he took EPO those two times he fought Cody? Because Cody thinks otherwise.
Well, not really. I don't know. It's just because he's dropping that weight that much and he's trying to get himself down. He doesn't want to feel weak all the time, so I understand why he did it. But, you know, they keep his samples from all the previous fights, so they test their samples, and anything comes through, then it is worth noting.
Well, apparently they said they're not going to do that.
Why is that?
They just said they don't want to... they're not going to test his stuff from his earlier fights. Yeah, they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very confusing, and I'm not sure why they were doing that. I honestly don't, and there's no proof that TJ took EPO in his prior fights. And I don't think he did. I think he took EPO so he could get down.
Basically so he could get more reps. Train harder than the fact that you're gaining in time where your body is actually so much more weaker. Mm. I think that was the overall goal.
He was trying to get that really high level of cardio in so he could be in a severe caloric deficit, as well as that weight cut. That water cut must be horrendous.
Mm-hmm. So since we're on the topic of TJ Dillashaw, what do you reckon it's going to be like when he returns to the UFC? Do you think it's going to be positive or negative?
I think it's going to be a mix of both. I honestly think it's going to be a mix of both, because let's not forget he's done a lot of really good things in the UFC. You know, from going from the Ultimate Fighter through his stretch through, you know, the bantamweight division. I think he's still a brilliant fighter. I think the reception will be mixed, and I think TJ will just have to win back the crowd with the performances that he does.
What is the issue between Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw? Do you know?
So,
because I know that Cody Garbrandt, he hates TJ Dillashaw way more than TJ Dillashaw hates Cody Garbrandt. So, what is the situation with that?
From what I know, so it starts with Uriah Faber. Uriah Faber had pulled TJ out of, was it high school or college or something like that. He took him out of there and put him under his wing and trained him at the Alpha Male gym. And TJ gets a spot on the Ultimate Fighter. Doesn't do so well in the finale, I'm pretty sure. I think he lost. He did well up until the finale. I think he lost. Then gets fights in the UFC. Does really well. Fights. He ends up getting the championship title, and then this starts to have issues afterwards, because, well, actually, no, it was before then. It was before he actually got the title. But what happened was, Uriah Faber had looked after him since he came out of high school and college or whatever, and then TJ said, "Hey, you've brought in this guy who's a good striking coach, Dwayne Ludwig. I really like this guy. I'm going to split my camp between Dwayne Ludwig, which is the striking coach who runs Bang Muay Thai? I'm pretty sure Bang Muay Thai. And I will cut time in between them and Uriah Faber, Jim. And he knows all Cody, and he's all good friends with all those guys. I think, who's the other guy? Is it Andre Philly, who's also the other UFC fighter? And then there's a dispute with this. He goes and says, I went and did, some sponsorship stuff because, they were paying me. And the way TJ says that, he says that Uriah Faber gave him an ultimatum, said, it's either you come with us or you go to Bang Muay Thai with Dwayne Ludwig. However, Uriah Faber and Cody Garbrandt disagree, and they said, no, that's a bald-faced lie. We never said that. I believe Uriah just said, you know, I don't appreciate that you're going out there to be with Dwayne and not here, right? And that ended up being that TJ pretty much... I think that whole disagreement must have made things a lot more worse, because now you've said, you know, I don't like you being over there, and then TJ's going, hey, I've got to make a decision for me and my family. I'm gonna jump. You know, you guys are my friends, but my family comes first. So I think he went with Dwayne because he saw something big in Dwayne. Dwayne instructs him, is a really good head coach. He ends up getting the championship belt, then loses it, then comes back and gains it from beating Cody, has a rematch with Cody. Then he goes and fights Henry Cejudo, gets popped for EPO. And during this whole time, Cody has called him, what Conor McGregor always called him, was the snake in the grass. They were now, originally in Ultimate Fighter, when Conor McGregor was against Uriah Faber, as head coaches, not in actual fighting, Conor said straight away, he's a snake in the grass.
Yeah, you know? he wanted Uriah Faber to fight TJ.
He did, and he said, you know, all kinds of stuff. And they really said, no, TJ's not like that. And then later on, it was TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt, and they were saying, you know what, everything that was true was what Conor said. Conor was correct. He did, you know, predict that it was happening. And that's the main issue. I think it was that he was splitting time between Dwayne and Uriah, and really, he should have favored Uriah from the get-go because he got him out. However, I think TJ just made the decision for his family. I think he went and had a look, and he said, look, I see something in Dwayne that he can give me that you can't give me, Uriah. I'm sorry. I do appreciate you guys. I'm sure it was a bit really upsetting because he's came out of them from college or high school, and he's went, I've got to make a decision for me. I get both sides. And one side, Uriah was expecting more loyalty. And I think both of us really do respect loyalty. However, I mean, I think TJ thinks the same thing, but his loyalty was to his family. I don't know whose side to pick, to be honest. And I think the only ones that truly know is TJ Dillashaw and the rest of Alpha Male.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, TJ Dillashaw is coming back. So one thing we talk about...
Did you check when?
No, he said it's next year, 2021. So he doesn't have a fight yet confirmed, obviously, because they won't start confirming the fight till some point again next year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because the latest fight that's been announced is the 24th of October, Khabib versus Gaethje, which let's talk about, for example, because there's been a little bit of Twitter beef, because you know how much I love to talk about Twitter beef.
Yeah.
So Khabib basically sent out a message saying, look, I respect Justin Gaethje, but we're not going into a boxing match. He says something along the lines of, I'm going to take him into the deepest, darkest part of the ocean and drown him. And then basically Conor just responded to him saying, oh, so chase him around the cage just for 10 minutes. Get chased around the cage sniff for 10 minutes.
Strokes.
Yeah, snitch his crotch muffin.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. It's just like the amount, the fact that Conor just loves to refute everything that Khabib says. And even though
it wasn't that long after he said, you know, it sucks for your loss and that. And then I think he waited a couple of weeks and he was like, oh, yeah, you're just busy sniffing jocks, aren't you?
Yeah.
I love Conor and, you know, it sucks. It really sucks what happened with Khabib.
Well, it does. But the thing is with Conor and Khabib, they have such a weird history. There's a photo of them two together smiling, saying, I'll be happy to spar with you any day, basically. And then all of a sudden they literally became enemies. And then they became
after the thing with Artem.
Yeah.
Artem. Khabib called him a chicken or something like that.
Yeah.
Artem gets says, slapped, and then Conor goes, all right, I'm on my way.
Yeah.
And he flies 20 of his buddies on a private jet to go over to America, storm the place, throw a few dollies, maybe get arrested.
Then we have the infamous match.
And then we have an infamous match. You know,
then the cage jump. And then Dylan Danis, Dildo Danis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's also a good segue because in Bellator, you know, there was... it was AJ... AJ Agassan?
Yeah.
He wasn't happy with the judging. This was yesterday's fight on Saturday. And he didn't agree with the decision. And he refused to shake his hand. However, the ref pulled them together and said, "No, shake my hand. Shake my hand." The winner of that fight actually said, "Dylan Danis is next. Dylan Danis is next." Dylan Danis is funny, dude.
Dylan Danis hasn't fought in a long, long time.
Yeah, quite a while actually.
Yeah. Well, his last fight he won via submission.
Naturally, he's very good on the ground.
Yeah, he fights a lot in those jiu-jitsu tournaments. Like he fights a lot in Polaris.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of more mainly his like style. And just Dylan Danis, he just loves to talk shit. He loves to stir shit up on Twitter, on Instagram. Like he had beef, on Twitter, he had beef with Jake Paul and Logan Paul, and they were basically saying, "Oh, we'll fight you, I'll fight you," and it was back and forth. And then Dylan Danis wasn't allowed to go show up to Logan Paul versus KSI fight, and he wasn't allowed in.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, and not even that, but here's just some of the things that he posts. On Twitter, like when Henry Cejudo retired, he just said, "No one cares." I'm like, get real, man. He's a 2-division champion, all Olympic champion, and you just happen to be having a few fights in Bellator.
You know he does that so you talk about him, though. He full knows that, and I'm sure he does respect Cejudo. He's just saying that so he gets a few views, he gets a few clicks. And it makes him... I mean, Conor does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Stay relevant. Stay relevant even when you're retired. That's what Conor does extremely well.
He did it with Khabib. They were basically going back and forth because when Conor had the allegations against him, he came back and said, "Your wife's a towel, mate."
That was
rough, man. I think it got to the point where Dana White had to literally say, "Look, I'm going to go talk to Conor. This shit's got to stop because it's getting out of hand." So that's literally what happened.
Another fight that was on yesterday was Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson. We were very excited for that fight. Well, it was a rematch. Michael Chandler just looked very dominant against Benson Henderson in the first round. And he actually ended up knocking him out later on. It was such a good fight. It wasn't the longest fight, but it was... I think a lot of people... believe Michael Chandler is such an excellent fighter, and he should, because now he's actually got free agency. Mm-hmm. He's now a free agent, and now he's looking around and he's thinking what's the best thing for him. Would you suggest he goes to UFC or he goes to ONE FC? Or
I want him to go to the UFC.
I
want him to go to the UFC, but I don't want him to be too rushed, because the last thing I want is for Michael Chandler to get the Ben Askren treatment. Here's the problem with Ben Askren now. For those of you, a lot of people just did not know who he was before UFC. Mm. Ben Askren was a very, very well-accomplished and well-established fighter. But then when he went to the UFC, and then he had that controversial win against Robbie Lawler, and then he had that, flying knee to the head from Jorge Masvidal, he was now forever going to be known as that guy who got knee in the face and lost in the first. Well, not forever, but a lot of people know him as that guy rather than people just discredit or just disregard what he's achieved up to then.
When he came to the UFC, he was he was an older competitor, and he also had, you know, hip issues and hip injuries and things like that. The UFC are not going to give these fighters that have been in other promotions an easy walk up to the title. They're really not. So they did give him someone really tough, Robbie Lawler.
Well,
controversially won.
Mm-hmm.
Then they gave him Jorge Masvidal, and then to finish it off, they gave him Damian Maia.
Yeah.
They gave him three killers.
Yeah.
Three absolute killers.
Yeah. See that, but Michael Chandler, he's a very, very well established striker, and he's a lightweight too. Mm-hmm. So looking at the lightweight rankings, a good fight for him to start off with. Some would be like an Ala Quinta or a Kevin Lee.
Some people suggested Cerrone. Some people suggested that if he does go to the UFC, Cerrone could be a potential.
Yeah, it's just because we know that Cerrone is one of the biggest yes men. Yes, man.
He's down to fight anyone.
He will fight anyone. And he's just, that's why everyone loves him. Like, everyone loves the Legend of Cowboy. You know, he's on his ranch.
Mm.
You know, he's shooting paintball guns. He has his own gym on his ranch and goes and rides horses. Yeah. He's just, he lives the best life, that guy.
Well, he always says he wants to live his best life. Yeah. And I don't think he wants to. I think one of the quotes I remember, when I think of Donald Cerrone, I think of when he spoke and he said, you know, a lot of people try and save up their money until they turn, they retire, and then they do all their fun stuff. Well, why don't you do that before you retire? Why don't you do it right now? Why would you wait until you retire and you're old and maybe you don't even want to do those things anymore? Why not do it in the now and have fun?
Do you remember the story that he told on the Joe Rogan podcast about the cave diving?
It was about when he almost died.
Do you want to repeat the story? Because it's a really fucking good story.
It is a good story. If you guys want to see the full length thing, you should watch it on Joe Rogan. However, a quick abridged version is that he went out cave diving. And one of the things that they suggest, because it wasn't his first time cave diving, one of the things that they say is that you need to make sure that you stay calm. You need to stay calm in any situation. If anything happens, and like anything, because I assume you've done like swimming and life saving and things like that. I know I have. I used to be like have the life saving certification. And a lot of people, when you ever see someone drowning or something like that, they're frantic and they go into the natural sense to grab at anything, which includes you. So if you go over, they say when you're a lifesaver or you're a diver, your first thing to look after is you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. Yes, the you know what's happening right there is terrible, right? But you're not in a good state. If you go over there stressed, you go over there, and instead of one person getting in trouble or injured or dying, there's two. That's not a win. That's not a win. So what they say is, you know, whenever you do get frantic or something like that, you don't go to grab onto someone. Which unfortunately did happen with Cerrone, because what Cerrone did, he was out cave diving and he's using the oxygen tank and things like that. And he's going through, and what happens is one of the guys that's in front of him gets into an issue where I think he got tangled up or something like that. And Cerrone went over to help him and he said, you know, this was my big mistake. I shouldn't have done that. And he goes and jumps on him and he gets so frantic that the guy gets out, right? But now that entrance to the cave is now completely black, because what he's done is he's kicked up all the dust and debris and everywhere, and now it's foggy and can't see anything. So Serenity's got to try and find his way, and he was lucky because also he has a limited oxygen supply. He's very in very deep water, right? There's a many, many bad things that can go wrong, right? And he's going, and he managed to find his way in the dark all the way out and crawls out of the cave and goes and manages to get up to the top and get out. And he said how could you not be pissed? Because that guy almost cost you your life. And I believe it was the instructor that did it. The instructor who was meant to be, you know, the veteran, we're doing this thing, freaked out, and almost cost Cerrone his life. So I'm sure Cerrone has many near-death situations, which is why he's such a down-to-earth kind of guy. And he's got such a good outlook on living his best life in the present. But, you know, it really is a really scary story to listen to, because I think it goes on for at least 20 minutes or something like that, you know?
It's a great story to listen to.
It's one of the best.
Well, because I respect the fact that he just didn't give up. You know, he found a way out of the cave. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, everyone loves Cowboy Cerrone. He's one of the oldest. He's been around since one of the beginning. He's been fighting for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. He's had the most wins by knockout. He's got the most fight of the night bonuses.
You know, could be a good fight for Michael Chandler. And I would also like to say, I really hope Michael Chandler goes to the UFC because he's an excellent lightweight and I think he does pose threats to the UFC top rankings. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think he's got amazing power. He's very well-rounded, excellent at wrestling. You know, he's a real threat to those top guys in the lightweight division. I really think so.
We can definitely see it happening in the future. I would like to definitely see him fighting,
someone like Cerrone or Aliquinta. Yeah. I also wanted to put forth, and this is an interesting topic, because a lot of people would like cross-promotional MMA fights. So they would like a UFC fighter fighting in a Bellator fight, or like, you know, like a UFC welterweight, like Kamaru Usman fighting the welterweight champion in Bellator.
That could happen.
But the reason why I don't think it will happen is because the UFC likes to have the image that they are the best.
Yeah.
Which I still believe they do, right? But they don't want to do any cross-promotional stuff because, you know, there is the puncher's chance, there is things like that. And the UFC want to have that, continue that image that they are the best, and they don't even want to even give the guys credit in Bellator and ONE FC, right? Even though they do have the best fighters in there, you really don't have to. But they do. They really don't want to have that cross-promotional fight. I don't think it will happen in the future. Unless it's boxing, because that's an obvious thing. You know, the boxers will 100% have a bigger advantage than the MMA fighters. They're specialized in that one art form. Yeah. I don't see that kind of stuff happening. Which is why when...
Never say never, eh?
Could be potentially
for the future, but it's going to be so far down the track, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Just quickly, I wanted to mention that next week, you know, we are doing a cross-promotional thing of our own with the For a Laugh podcast with Daniel Aiden and Connor Hannum, which is going to be really fun. We're going to be filming it on Sunday, so we'll keep you posted on our Instagram and our social media when it'll be released.
It's going to be our first ever collaboration with another podcast.
It's going to be so fun. It's going to be really, really fun.
I mean, because we don't have... it's just us who just do this podcast. We haven't had any guests. I mean, it's against
the future, though.
We will in the future, for sure. But, you know, and it's going to be working with two guys who've probably been doing podcasting for, four years now?
3 or 4 years.
And, yeah, I mean... It's going to be interesting because normally when it comes to podcasts, like, you know, it's one or two people. For this podcast, it's going to be four.
Four of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm seriously looking forward to it. Sunday's a really big day for us because I believe we're filming that in the afternoon, but the morning is UFC 252. Which is a huge fight. Tons of big fights. I think the most notable is Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic. That's for the baddest man on the planet. This is the trilogy fight that really ends the decision who is the greatest heavyweight champion in the UFC.
Well, you're liking both. The thing is, like, Daniel Cormier, he's already got everything good going for him. You know, he's a big presenter, he's a commentator of the UFC, you know, he's best friends with Joe Rogan and all the other presenters, and, you know, he's been fighting in heavyweight for quite some time. You know, he's quite known for his feuds with Jon Jones. Mm-hmm. Stipe, he's knocked everyone out in heavyweight. He wasn't afraid of anyone. He beat Francis Ngannou. And when now pretty much everyone's too scared to touch Francis.
Nobody wants to go near Francis.
And so, and then he lost to Cormier via an elbow in the clinch.
Mm-hmm.
And now he beat him again.
Was it an elbow? I thought it was an elbow.
It was a very, very short punch
in the clinch.
Yeah. And then he came back, he beat him, and he got his titles back. But the thing is, if whichever way it goes, you know, I've got to give respect to both of them, especially Cormier, because, you know, he vindicated his title,
validated
his light heavyweight You know what I mean? He relinquished it. And then now he lost his heavyweight. So he went from being the double champ to just a contender. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's huge for him. But Stipe, you know, he's got so much to prove. And, you know, he's beaten everyone. And both of them are, I'm pretty sure, in the late. Daniel Cormier is 42, 43.
Yeah.
And Stipe's almost 40 as well. So both of those guys are at the end of the are coming to the end of the road. So it would be a great way for both of them to go out. If Cormier goes out, it's his last fight, so I can definitely see him having that motivation to finish on a high note. But Stipe maybe has one or two left in him.
All right. So who are you picking?
That's the thing. It's so hard for me to pick because they both won one. It's a quite even playing field.
Cormier early, Stipe later.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
It's hard. It's a hard, you know. I favour Miocic a little bit because of the amount of heavyweights that he's fought, as well as the proof that he's done well against Cormier in the later rounds. Now, that's not counting out Cormier because he is such... He really is an excellent heavyweight. Like, a really good fighter. And his wrestling is amazing. It is a tough fight for either man. And we know this because they're going 1-1 into this third fight. I do favor Stipe a little bit more. A little bit more.
We'll have to see them.
Well... Now, you don't have to tell me who you're picking, but I want to read out UFC 252 because it is stacked. Mm-hmm. It is stacked. Ah, get over there. I'm going to tell you. So we have JDS, Junior Dos Santos, versus Rosenstrike.
Mm-hmm.
Big fight because Rosenstrike just came off a loss to Francis in the first round.
Yeah.
First 10 seconds of the round.
First round, yeah.
Scary fight to see. Magomed Ankalaev versus Ion Cutelaba. I'm not super into this fight as much as the others. This is going to be an excellent fight as well. However, they're not the biggest names compared to the other fights, which is Pedro Munhoz versus Frankie Edgar. That's a huge fight as well. And Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera, which is the one we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That is a stacked main event.
That's going to be a big Sunday.
Sorry, main card, sorry. But that is a big, big Sunday.
Yeah.
We're going to have to make sure we tell the boys that we need to push it later, later in the day, because we need to watch this entire card.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I think even Jim Miller has a fight. Jim Miller has a fight on the undercard, I believe. Now, I'm pretty sure Jim Miller... He's got a crazy amount of fights in the UFC. He's 32-14. He's 36-year-old versus Vink Pichel. That's a crazy lightweight fight as well. Jim Miller is, you know, he's a very big competitor in the UFC light division, but he holds the record for the most wins in the UFC lightweight division. You really can't count this guy out. He's been fighting for such a long time. Such a long time. So I'm excited for that fight, and that's on the undercard as well. That's a huge fight to see.
Mm. Yeah. It's good. It's good that UFC's gone hard this time of the year, and even with everything that's going on as well since COVID. And I'm glad that they're just keeping it going. And
I'm really glad that, and it's going to be the UFC Apex, so that's the smaller cage. So, and that is... apparently they rumored that it is inclining more fighters to engage in more of the stand-up fighting and engage in more knockouts. But the thing is, this is headlined by one of the greatest fights I think we're ever going to see, which is Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier.
All right.
This is literally for history. This is one of the... You cannot skip on this fight. All these fights on the main card, brilliant, right? Absolutely brilliant. But Stipe Miocic for Daniel Cormier, you cannot miss it. It is the fight for heavyweight legacy. There's a lot of naysay on who's the greatest UFC heavyweight. If Miocic wins or Daniel Cormier wins, it puts a huge feather in your cap that you are the best.
Alrighty.
All right. So just to finish off, I hope you enjoyed the MMA Hour. If you need to check out our social media, find us at The Last Set Podcast on Instagram. We're available on Instagram, Facebook. We have a Facebook page. We're available on Twitter, TikTok, everything. We're available on Podbean. We've got our own website on Podbean. If you like listening to us, please like, subscribe, comment below. I think our next Everyday Hour, I believe we should do a Q&A. So if you want to ask us any questions, please comment below. We're also going to put that on all our social media. We're going to do an anonymous. If you want to do it anonymous and we will leave your name out, that's fine. If you're fine with that, with actually having your name, that's cool as well. But I would like a Q&A. I think that would be really, really cool. I think a lot of people would like to ask you questions as well. And I think that would be a really cool...
Some people might ask you questions as well.
They might ask me questions, but I think you're the more popular one. So
I'll put it out on my Instagram and Facebook and see what happens.
I think we'll write down all the Q&As and we'll answer them on the next Everyday Hour where we talk all things... not fighting.
Alrighty.
Alright.
And don't forget, next Sunday we will be appearing on Just for a Laugh podcast.
So we'll also put their details as well on social media, because you should check them out as well, because they've got over 50 episodes or something like that. So you should definitely check them out.
Alright, guys. Take care.
Thank you, guys. All the best. Cool. See ya.
Peace.